Thank you, Your Honor. Please, the Chief Justice and the Justices of the Ohio Supreme Court, I have the privilege of arguing before you today concerning an appeal that has been filed relative to a matter dismissing an action filed by Heather Orman in the Court of Common Pleas, Attorney in County, Ohio. There's probably two questions that all seven of you would like to ask, and I'll answer those two questions first. Should the appeal have been filed? Yes. And will we be here today if the appeal has been filed? No. So, putting those two questions aside, I would like to say there are other reasons why justice was not served in this case, though. And those reasons have to do with the basis of the arbitration, the referral of the arbitration, as well as the fact that there were other methods available to the court to resolve this matter.
I'm particularly concerned about the issue of consent and the fact that no objection made to the arbitration. It looks like the court participated in the arbitration. How do you get around the issue that you consented to the program
The consent was he went along, okay? He did not consent at any time. He did not file the proper objection, I agree.
Never was a constitutional challenge or a challenge of the law of Ohio filed before the arbitration.
There was no constitutional challenge relative to the arbitration. That's correct. However, 3 hours coming back, the objection was approached by counsel, by our office. To the fact that the matter had to refer to arbitration.
And that was off the record, though, ex parte, as I said.
I don't know if it was ex parte so much as there was a pretrial held. This particular trial test would have pretrials. And there was a pretrial held where the judge made a decision, and that decision was to refer the case to arbitration. At that pretrial, which was not a record here, the objection was made, I believe, to the fact that the case was going to be referred to arbitration.
I saw something on the record that's a notation that there was an objection made, some type of a notation. I don't know where in the record the judge put that. But
well, the judge, this particular trial judge writes on the folder. Decided to hold, he would make an occasion. And he may very well have noticed that there was an objection made by counsel. But there's several things going on here that we have to look at. One is, you know, the court, and believe me, I'm a strong proponent of ADR. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, I had one of these arbitrations. And there are many cases that are eligible for these arbitrations. This is a great way to expedite justice. This is a great way to get the parties' matters heard before the court at a reasonable cost. However, I do not believe this court, with the rule of superintendents, ever intended that this will be a dumping ground for all cases. In this particular situation, we had a trial judge that decided all cases were going to arbitration regardless of the merit. Now, one of the things that the court has said in its rule is the judge needs to make a decision as to the value of the case. Now, in many cases, that's easy. If there's a contract claim for $10,000, that's before the court.
But, counsel, let's say the court made a terrible mistake, and it's a terrible rule to refer everybody to arbitration, and your case shouldn't have gone because it was worth lots more money than the rule provided. What harm befalls a plaintiff who goes through that procedure and then files the appeal that allows you to have a trial de novo?
Well, there is some harm. I'm sorry, there's some financial obligations that are incurred. There's prepare the process. There are several.
These are arguments we make all the time about, you know, when do you appeal and you have to go back. But in this case, the bad news is that's probably the question. The other question you want to answer for us is no appeal was filed from the arbitration. Only from the then eventually from the referral to arbitration. So, in as much as your client fails to pursue the right to a trial de novo, I mean, what are we here for?
Well, the reason we're here is because the Constitution allows that the right to a jury shall be inviolate.
And it was. But wasn't it here, counsel? Had the plaintiff file an appeal from the arbitration, the plaintiff would have had a right to trial.
If the plaintiff had filed an appeal from the arbitration, then the matter would have been heard de novo.
De novo. Yeah, which in essence does protect one's constitutional right to a trial, doesn't it? The rule provides for it. It's a sidestep, but as you say, that's all in the vein of the policy favoring trying to resolve these things in a forum. It may be too expensive. It may not be a good rule for your case, but in all events, the rule provides for a trial.
The rule does provide that there will be a trial in the middle of a time of trial. However, there is a rule, there's a statute that governs this, and that's 2711.21. And that statute specifically says how this should be handled with regard to medical malpractice claims. Our legislature has always carved, or since the 70s, when there was a malpractice system, for malpractice, there have always been a special set of rules for the litigants, a special mm-hmm. set of procedures for the litigants, special affidavits for the litigants, and many of these things have been found to be constitutional by this court. Because we have a special set of rules and we have a special procedure for arbitration in medical malpractice cases, now we're being told that, oh, by the way, the special set of rules for arbitration in medical malpractice cases is not applicable. You have to go through your local arbitration.
But it's a very clear statute, 2711.21, is there not?
No question.
Doesn't it say mutual consent?
What the statute says is this can occur, however, for this to be acceptable to the parties, there must be an agreement by the parties that this is their decision.
Mutual consent.
Mutual consent.
All right, so the issue is, can you ever cure... You know, the conversation has been that, well, you're not really prejudiced because you had a right to appeal afterwards, but don't you start before that point and say the statute was violated? And if the statute's violated, can you ever cure that by participation even?
Well, whether or not the statute confers subject matter jurisdiction on the court, whether or not the subject matter jurisdiction has been taken away from the court by the statute, whether or not the rule of arbitration, the drafters of your rule, I don't think ever envisioned that a complex medical malpractice case would ever fall under what we call mandatory arbitration or compulsory arbitration.
Let me go back to that complex issue. You had a statute that was removed that you claim resulted in disfiguration, correct?
Yes.
What were your medical specials?
Medical specials were, at that point, they hadn't been, there were significant medical specials because the surgery had not been performed to the care. $50,000 exclusive of interest and cost.
but the arbitrator is January.
There's nothing that prevents it from going to court. But if an arbitrator sat in the town and said, gee, we're here with a $50,000 arbitration, it's all this award.
It doesn't make any difference. It's statute. It's clear. It's got to come out.
Yes, the parties agree. Rule 103.12, it says an award may exceed $50,000 of exclusive interest.
That is part of the parties agreement.
Parties couldn't. It's included in the award.
Let me ask you the legal, what I think is the primary legal issue before us. This is conflict between 2711 and 21, and as you know, the local rule, and even the school superintendents. You, in your brief, you argued the substantive versus the procedural issue. I'd like to hear your strongest arguments to why this is not a procedural issue, that is, the assigning of a case to arbitration. Procedural issue where we, where the system determines the conditions under which an issue is referred to an arbitrator. That it seemed to me the right to arbitration perhaps is substantive, but who does it when and what the conditions are might be procedural. Your argument is that that's all substantive.
With regard to that particular statute, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Goetz. Mr. Graziano.
At police support counsel, my name is Bob Graziano. I represent Dr. McIntyre and his professional corporation in this case. The court, please, I would like to take 10 minutes from my part and allow Mr. Walsh 5 minutes for his argument. Given the questions, the court's well aware of what's at issue in this case. I think a good place, at least for me to start, is that this is not a matter of the trial court's jurisdiction. The trial court received jurisdiction in this case when the complaint was filed. And the local rules, this is a procedural matter. So I don't think in answer to one of the questions, I don't think that this is a matter of the jurisdiction of the trial court. I believe that the trial court had jurisdiction on the filing of the complaint, and this court, with superintendent's rules, allowed the common police force to make these arbitration rules, which the Franklin County Court of Common Police did, pursuant to 103, and those are the rules that are at issue.
Does the local rule, may a local rule conflict with a statute?
No, Your Honor.
Doesn't it here?
No, Your Honor. I believe it supplements the statute. When you look at the statute...
Okay, where do you start, with the rule or the statute?
Depends on where you are in the proceedings, I suppose.
Well, that's why I asked, because at this point, the judge says I'm going to refer it to arbitration. At least on three occasions, the lawyer said no. I read at that point, I would think you go to 2711-21, which is pretty clear. If all of the parties to the medical, dental, and so on agree, to submit it to arbitration.
Well, I would differ with you, Your Honor, on a couple of points. First of all, I don't think there's anything in the record that shows an objection to the arbitration process. Statements here, statements there, I believe the court is controlled by the record. I believe there is nothing in this case that shows that there was an objection filed. Also, I think that if you want to start at the beginning, I don't think that argument, conflict between the local rules and statutes, is applicable in this case, because it was never brought up in the trial court. There was never a pleading filed or a motion filed that said this case should not go to arbitration because there's a conflict between the statute and the local rule.
Okay, either or both. Either or both of those may be fatal to their case, but let's assume that we don't have a problem with either of those procedural. Let's get to the issue of the conflict.
Statute, yes, Your Honor. When you look at the statute, I believe the statute's read the other way. I think if the parties get together and say, we want to arbitrate this case, the judge says, no, you're not going to arbitrate it, you're going to try it. You can't do that. I think the statute says if the parties agree to arbitrate, then we're going to go to arbitration, and that's not a practice case. There's nothing in the statute that forbids the case from going to arbitration if a party says, no, I don't want to arbitrate. The statute says if the parties agree, the court shall submit it to arbitration. It doesn't say that if one party disagrees, it will not go to arbitration.
So it doesn't follow that if you do agree, it's got to go to arbitration. It doesn't follow that if you don't agree, it doesn't go to arbitration. That would seem to logically follow.
But that's not what it says. You need to read the meaning of the statute.
I've read it. I've read it and argued this whole matter before because it's a problem when you get the judge who says, I don't care. It's going to arbitration. And sometimes you didn't want your case to go to arbitration. And really, it isn't arbitration anyway. It's nothing but mediation. Arbitration has a final, non-appealable result.
Then in that instance, if we did go to arbitration pursuant to the local rules, then it should be final then, not appealable.
No, because it says it classes it even in the statute as non-binding arbitration, which is an oxymoron.
I understand your position, and if it's non-binding arbitration, non-binding arbitration. This was an arbitration, then it was a binding arbitration.
And that's maybe why the statute says you have to consent.
Oh, I don't believe that's what the statute says.
Okay. I guess my real question is, if a statute conflicts with a local rule, I recognize if it conflicts with one of the rules that we directly promulgate under Article 4, Section 5, that unless it is substantive, the rule prevails over the statute. Now, would that be true over local rules as well?
I believe the statute would control.
The statute would control.
Yes,
so that's different than our rules. Because the statute does not control over our rules if it's procedural. No, Supreme Court rules for the procedure and practice in our courts, the civil rules.
Okay. They would control that.
Okay, but do they rise to the same level? The local rules rise to the same rule level as the rules that we promulgate.
Well, if this court gave the trial courts the power to promulgate the local rules, then I believe that they do rise to the same level.
Interesting issue, because
yeah,
that's not what the Constitution says.
I'd be interested in talking about that. Yes, our rules promulgated have an opportunity for the General Assembly
exactly
to go up or down on those local rules would have an extension.
Well, maybe I'm not following you on what rules we're talking about, because as I understand the issue in this case, we're looking at the rules of superintendents, which give the trial court the power to promulgate the local rules.
Now,
and
if like
the local rules, they hear the superintendents rules.
Justice Douglas's question is can, by our delegation of authority to promulgate local rules, can they be elevated to the status of overriding the statute if both are related to procedures?
But I don't think
in the same fashion that the rule promulgated by this court.
I don't know the answer to that question. Sorry. I don't know, but what I do know, what's at issue in this case, is the local rules mirror the superintendent's rules. And rules are clear. There are a lot of rules in this case, a lot of rules with court. We have 15 minutes to argue. Those are the rules, and we abide by those rules, I hope.
Is it trial?
No, Your Honor.
Do you have any idea what special pledge is for?
I do not, Your Honor.
Well, Superintendent's Rule 15, which is the rule of this court, mm-hmm. of course, is the rule that gives the trial courts the authority to adopt local, very, very expressly, it gives them authority to adopt local rules, but 2B says, upon written request of a party, the court, meaning the trial court, shall appoint a board of three arbitrators in the same manner a single arbitrator is appointed. That's for mandatory arbitration. So it seems that our rule conflicts also with the statute.
Yes.
Have you looked at it?
No, I have not.
You following me?
Okay. I'm following. You're saying that in order to go to arbitration, a party must ask the trial judge to submit the case.
Well, it sets out the plan has to be filed with the court and so forth. The trial courts can adopt the rule, file it with this court. But then, referring to arbitrators, the court shall establish a list of qualified attorneys, that means the trial court, upon a written request of a party. The court shall appoint a board of three arbitrators in the same manner as the same arbitrator is appointed. So it looks as if our rule of superintendents conflicts with the statute just as the local rule does. So that raises the issue, does it not? It makes the issue whether our rule can supersede the statute, which means, again, we're back to the substantive versus procedural issue, I think. Neither of you referred to Rule 15, I don't think. I didn't take a brief, but that's where we are. The local rule seems to sort of track what we said in our rule of superintendent.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, but I don't even think we get to that point. None of these issues were raised in the trial court.
Well, but for us, this case was allowed, I assume, because at least four judges thought there was a legal issue here. It seems to me the legal issue, there are two issues, it seems. One is the legal issue. Does the trial court, this conflict between the statute and our rules, that's the legal issue. The other issue then is whether the appellants waived the rights they had. That's the factual issue. So we have to write in the law, then we have to decide whether the appellants win or lose under the law.
I don't believe you get to the substantive issue as you're talking about the conflict, because everything was waived at the trial court.
Because whatever it is that they waived it, that's your argument.
That's the first argument. We're not even at that point. I would agree that if it was brought up in the trial court, then we would be here discussing that issue. That issue was not brought up in the trial court. I believe the local rules are clear. It provides, one of the questions was asked, does it take away the right to a jury trial? I believe this court said in the Coonser case that it does not. The right to a trial de novo preserves the right to a jury trial, so that's still there. I don't believe there is a conflict between the statute and the rules. And I believe that the court applied the local rules appropriately in this case. The third day that passed before the entry of judgment was granted. I believe that the referral to the K2 arbitration was also appropriate. I know we're talking about $50,000. We're talking about the complicated issues. I don't believe any of those apply in this case. There's no evidence that it was over $50,000. The court is allowed, the trial court is allowed to make a determination. It has the discretion to determine whether a case is $50,000. And Justice Stratton indicated the arbitration panel is not precluded from awarding over $50,000 to the case attorney staff. In fact, in this case, there was a defense verdict, which shows that the value of this case was not zero. So it's not over $50,000. The court made that determination. I think we cited a case in the brief that if the court reversed the case of arbitration, it is assumed that the court looked at that. But I think my time is up. I will allow my co-counsel.
Two facts. Too fast.
Thank you, Mr. Graziano, Mr. Wall.
May it please the court, I'm here today on behalf of Non-Farmal Health. And to get right to the what apparently is the Supreme Court, the rules that this court promulgated can be promulgated under two separate sections. I believe, and I may be mistaken, it's only one Section 4 and the other Section 5. Section 4 deals with substantive rules, such as rules of civil procedure. Those rules promulgated by this court will override statute. Absolutely no question about that whatsoever. However, rules promulgated by this court under Section 5, which are the procedural rules, will not override statute. That is just as clear. Therefore, the question in this case is there a conflict between 2711 and 2021 and Local Rule 103? Our position is there is not. Now, to answer that question, you need to go back to 1923. This court decided Struthers versus Sokol. In that case, this court said, were there to be a conflict on rule versus the statute, there has to be something that the local rule either allows or forbids, that the statute either forbids or allows. That's the conflict. So you look at this case, look at 2711.21, and where in that statute do you find words to the effect of the only way a case goes to arbitration is a medical case? This is what the parties agree. That's the language you need to find in 2711.21 to find a conflict with Local Rule 103. That language isn't there. It isn't there, and there's no way you can put it there at this point in time. Now, the legislature might decide to do that down the road, that's their right. They haven't done it yet. So again, where's the conflict? There isn't a conflict. There has to be an express prohibition in this particular case of medical malpractice arbitration without complete consent of all parties. That wasn't present. Now, as far as the value of the case, our firm did represent Mount Carmel Health at the arbitration hearing. Unfortunately, there was no record made of it. I wasn't at the arbitration hearing, but in my review of the notes made by counsel who was there, I don't believe there's any reference to an actual dollar amount at the arbitration hearing as far as what the damages were suffered by plaintiff. So I'm sorry that I can't answer that question. Now, as far as the question raised by Justice Redman, there is still, despite the fact there is some handwritten notation inside the file folder, that does not constitute something in the record. That's the file folder. I can't tell if I'm looking at it whose handwriting that is. I'm not sure that it's Judge Connors. It may have been the staff attorneys, it may have been some secretary or bailiff. You can't tell from handwriting. That's not part of the record. So there wasn't an objection filed on the record in any other place. Now getting to the other issue, which has been somewhat talked about, and that's the absolute right to jury trial, which plaintiff
can't have. Let me just stop you there, if I may. There's a reference in the record to Judge Connor's street language in his referring, he says he refers all these cases to arbitration. Do you think the rule requires anything more than the judge just saying, I refer every case to arbitration? Is there any discretion? Do we look at any discretion here or not? The rule doesn't speak to that. Do you have any thought about it?
Well,
it seems like a rather cavalier attitude of a trial judge to say, I refer every case to arbitration, and use some language that probably a judge shouldn't use on the record. But.
Well, and I guess my first response would have to be that there is no evidence in the record that Judge Connor made that statement. The plaintiff attempted to get that evidence in the record at the Court of Appeals level. That was the first time that even came up.
Okay, so it's not a, we don't have a direct.
That technically isn't in the record. And now, assuming for the sake of argument that the judge said that, there still needs to be some evidence of an abuse of discretion. And the fact that the judge refers absolutely every single case to arbitration doesn't necessarily mean he abuses his discretion. He looks at the facts of the case. In this particular case, the plaintiff failed to produce any evidence of one, that her damages did exceed $50,000, or two, that it did involve complicated issues of significant fact. As Justice Stratton has already pointed out, this isn't that complicated of a case. We're not dealing with, in fact, frankly, we're not dealing with anything like some type of a herniated disc or cancer or disease that's been caused by some unknown agent. You know, there's nothing complicated about this case. Either the doctor used the right procedure or he didn't. That's not a tough question to answer. And unfortunately, this is not also part of the record, but to the extent we're arguing about things that aren't in the record, the counsel for Dr. Meckenbauer at the trial effectively destroyed plaintiff's expert's testimony as far as whether Dr. Meckenbauer...
Let's stick with the record. That's probably the better way to do it. Well, and I want to stay with the record on your original statement. When you started your argument, you said Section 4 provides for us to promulgate rules with regard to substance, I think, and 5 is procedure. 4 and 5 of what?
Of the Constitution. There is a procedure, there is a substance, there is a section. I apologize for not being quoted to you.
Which article, do you know?
Yeah, which article?
Section. There are a lot of sections of the Constitution.
I appreciate
Well, you got to be talking about Article 4. because that's where the power comes, Article 4, Section 5. The Supreme Court, in addition to all other powers, shall have general superintendence over the courts, and then we can enact rules. But I don't see, then B, the Supreme Court shall prescribe rules governing practice and procedure. I think they're both the same. If you're talking about 4, 4 is the Common Pleas Court, I think. Article
well,
4, Section 4. Yeah.
I know it's in there, and I know the case law indicates that there are two sections under the Constitution, one of which gives the court power to prescribe rules which cannot override statute, and the other section which gives the court the power to do that, because as Justice White points out, those rules are promulgated in conjunction with legislative oversight. So in this particular case, again, the question still is there a conflict? There isn't a conflict because 2711.21 does not forbid.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's
fine. Rich, you've saved almost 3 minutes of your time. Object to the arbitration. That's the point. That's what we have to get over, I think, to decide whether you waive the objection, the rule.
And the argument, I think, some of the argument I'm trying to make, Chief Justice, is that if the arbitration is a nullity, then we didn't, you know, then we have no threshold, you know. If the legislature has usurped or taken over this area and has indicated how these are going to proceed in medical malpractice cases, then whatever the court has done by promulgating its local rules of arbitration, compulsory arbitration, mandatory arbitration, then do not apply to medical. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.